Is that okay with you guys? Life is beautiful and yet so tragic. Unusual, maniacal magic. A never-ending highway, watch it turn and twist. An endless supply of decisions of risk. Life can be wonderful yet so unfair. A nightmare making you scared to care. Now even though the sorrow from your loss is looming, never forget the pain is so human. Life is rewarding and yet so challenging. A seesaw ride, each side needs balancing. Developing your talents and modern day skills. Better get your hustle on and pay those bills. Life is a waterfall continuously flowing. It feels more precious as I watch my children growing. I gotta keep working, minimize what I'm owing. Drifting upstream with the current as I'm rowing. No more staring back into the past. Avert your eyes, don't stare back into the blast. Keep it wise and look to the future at last. Brighter skies are ahead, so no need to go fast. Time flies if you're blinking, might
miss. Hello, this is Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music in Conversation. Kabir Sen, aka MC Kabir, is an educator at heart. He is a teacher at Shady Hill School in Cambridge, and his students are some of his biggest fans, as we discovered when several of his students attended our latest concert cast at City Winery in Boston. Kabir also plays with hip-hop reggae band Crush Factory, and they play often at local establishments like Lizard Lounge, The Plow and Stars, and Bull McCabe's. He's gotten great reviews in Billboard, The New Yorker, Boston Globe, International Herald Tribune, Boston Herald, Spin, Vibe, NPR, and so many others. We met up in front of an intimate crowd at Haymarket Lounge to talk hip-hop, education, lyrics, and their message. So here is our conversation with Kabir Sen, recorded at City Winery Boston in Boston, Massachusetts.
That sounded great. I was at the Lizard Lounge in Cambridge a few years ago with my buddy who also went to Wesleyan, who remembers your work back when we were kids, Ike Walker, who's actually a guest host of Above the Basement. And he said, you know, you got to get a hold of Kabir Sen someday. And then, like, months and months later, my good friend Kelly, who's in the house.
Kelly in the house.
The Haymarket Lounge house, who mentioned the same thing. It sort of came together, and we said, why don't we get together?
Yeah, I mean, I just love making music. I love sharing music. I grew up listening to so many different kinds of music. I love to share my passion for music, but also specifically hip-hop. I just feel like sometimes hip-hop, it has a lot of the trappings of negativity that they don't need to be there. They don't exist in my life, in my experiences with hip-hop. And I try and channel that. I try and have kids see that every day. Because I think that the images that are being put forth, and I know we were talking about it backstage, so a lot of the images that are put forth in hip-hop are images of negativity. There's got to be a space for other voices. I feel like that's what I'm like always trying to carve out. Even as I sort of like try and do my own show here, or as I try and perform with other musicians, or if I'm in a classroom, I just feel like I'm trying to carve out a positive space for hip-hop.
Let's go into the classroom a little bit. Sorry, school starts tomorrow when? What time? we got a couple kids in the audience that like made an awesome trip out to see Mr. Sen, which is awesome. So Mr. Sen is here. As long as we're talking about hip-hop and education, which is a big part of who you are,
yeah.
A lot of what we pride ourselves in educators and parents is to actually talk with kids at an early age.
Right.
And imprinting is huge. How do we take hip-hop and actually...
Yeah.
How do we utilize that art form
okay.
to have them express?
So I think there's a few different channels. So I teach a 7th and 8th grade hip-hop class, and the emphasis with 7th and 8th graders at the Shady Hill School, there's more of an emphasis on them writing and creating the content. So they're the ones that are writing, and I'm supporting them writing their things that they want. And I think at the younger ages, providing them with some experiences of pre-written content can help them just kind of almost engage in it in a way where they're more like using their voice, but they don't have the pressure of having to like come up with the written content on the spot. And so having the content is part of, to me, a big part of my work at a lot of different schools, where I try and create something that they can sink their teeth into. And when they're older, they will have had some experiences using their voices. Then as they start to find their own voice and they're writing down things, they're finding more of their own voice,
based on experiences that we've scaffolded for them, right? But I think at a younger age, providing the content can be really helpful. So for example, I work in the public schools at the Burbank School as part of this program in Belmont. The guy that runs it, Andrew Mountford, he runs a program called BASIC, which is the Belmont After School Enrichment Collaborative. And they serve hundreds and hundreds of kids in their after school program, but they have this month during the year where they call it the BASIC Olympics. And they have 12 different countries each year that are represented by different students. And the students have to research those countries and they engage in different activities related to those countries. Now, as the hip hop teacher at that school, I wrote 12 different raps about 12 different countries that they then sort of have to learn how to perform and choreograph. Potentially, some of them might try and record it. It's a continuation of work that I'm doing in the classroom. Similarly, Krista Demas, who's in the house tonight, and I and another music teacher, Darren Goulet, collaborated just last week on getting kids to kind of express their voices during the Social Justice Day at our school. So we had a Social Justice Day, and students were experiencing a lot of different workshops and speakers, and we gave them an opportunity to kind of write using rhyming couplets, and we created a video lesson that we then rolled out to all of the students. And this was something that, you know, was a team effort that, you know, was partly Krista and partly Darren and partly myself. And I felt like what was cool about that was we got everyone to really just kind of like have a voice. They all had a voice at the table. And even if they didn't share it, they all had a voice. And that's kind of like what I guess I'm trying to bring it back to, is this idea that like hip hop and writing, songwriting in general, like it doesn't have to be hip hop, but just expression, lyric writing, and just the teaching of writing and songwriting.
Well, there's has a certain space for kids, memory, you know? That you can, it can resonate with kids. It's a lot of fun. Let's hear, I want to hear an example of one of those countries we talked about.
I feel like we should get some of the kids up here to do them.
Okay. This is a good one. I want to hear this.
We are Ireland. We're in the North Atlantic. Our cliffs and natural beauty will leave you enchanted. Dublin is our capital with all kinds of traffic. Gaelic is our language and most people are Catholic. We have some famous symbols like the green shamrock, the emblem of a harp, and of course the Celtic cross. The shamrock is a symbol of the Holy Trinity. The harp is on our coins. The cross represents divinity.
Yeah. Nice. So did one kid write that, or did you that
for
them, right?
So for these ones, I pre-wrote these ones.
Okay, yeah.
And the students are given this assignment.
And they bring up their own.
They have to actually choreograph a performance of that. But we also have something in the fourth grade that some of my students are going to experience where they all become Greek gods. Don't tell anyone if I just spoiled the surprise.
Yeah, is it okay if I say something?
I'm just curious. Chuck Clow, ladies and
gentlemen. I've been sitting here all quiet and sad. Was it last winter? It was almost a year and a half ago, maybe. We went to Cambridge Latin High School, and we talked to some of the kids there. And they were so engaged and enthusiastic and passionate about their hip-hop gods that they love. And they named Kanye and Dre and all these amazing artists. Why is it seem that hip-hop touches a nerve so much that it speaks to these kids and you can learn as a teaching tool? Like, we also have our friend Reggie Gibson, who does Shakespeare hip hop, and he goes to the school and he teaches the kids Shakespeare.
Shady Hill too.
It's fantastic. And for whatever reason, hip hop just seems to grasp the
kids.
Why don't we
have one of the kids answer that question? Luma, what do you think? What speaks to you about hip hop? What do people like about hip hop as kids? Like, we do hip-hop in our lessons all the time, right?
Lumi, are you comfortable? Can I give you the mic? All right.
I think it's because, like, it's very groovy and, like, people like to, like, jam to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it speaks to a lot of people. And, like, a lot of hip-hop has, like, have, like, good messages to them. So, yeah, I think that's why.
Well said. Absolutely.
Thank you, Luma. I would also add on to it that, like, it's my job, if I'm exposing students to hip-hop, to kind of like find the positive messages. And like, I would say, actually, that is ongoing work, because it's really hard to find content that's like exclusively like appropriate, at least in the views of like what we view as academically appropriate through most age-appropriate language. And
right.
I think that like it's hard. It's actually hard to find it. And so I think that was a big challenge for me in the last 20 years. It's like, if I don't have the content, if I know I want to teach what I want to teach and I know that kids can learn from it, but I don't have the content, then I have to make it up. I have to create the content.
But, you know, at the same time, right, like, I think I read somewhere you said that you didn't want to be preachy in your in your rhyme.
Yeah.
Either.
Right.
And so there's a
dichotomy there.
Right. Yeah. So how do you manage
well,
that?
Well, okay. When people write rhymes and they are accused of being negative in their rhymes, I'll give you an example. Like, two people that are considered like godfathers of hip-hop, Biggie and Tupac, are considered really negative. And if you actually listen to their lyrics, there is a lot of things that are like violent or like that are hard to listen to that you wouldn't play in front of your kids, right? It's really easy to just sort of view that as a first person narrative. It's like that person is writing that thing and that is them speaking. And I think part of my challenge looking at critical thinking around music is like trying to get people to see when you're writing, even if it's in first person, it doesn't necessarily mean it's you. In the movies, people really get that. For example, like Martin Scorsese is viewed, you know, he's won Oscars and is viewed as an incredible filmmaker, which he is, but specifically the way he depicts violence in the Italian-American spirit in mafia movies is viewed as excellent and as genius. But I feel like in hip-hop, people aren't really given that same like creative license. You know what I mean? And partially, I think it is like racialized. Yeah. You know, like, so just to totally name it, I feel like there's this racial component to it too. It's like, oh, you're this person speaking from your point of view. And so it's easy to just sort of feel like it's negative. I think that that's also part of the equation too. It's like, it's not only that it's all negative, right? It's trying to find examples of how to put things in front of kids that enable them to critically depict what they like and don't like about something. So for example, say you love the beat, but someone is saying something that you find morally hard or difficult to challenge. How do you separate the two? And do you just block out the fact that they're saying that? And like, as parents, like, can we get more serious about talking to our kids about what that means as they're starting to already experience these things? So yeah. I think that just more and more, like, just opening up the conversation is really where I'm at.
You know what I love is how art, whether it's theater or movies or music or visual arts, will emulate culture. So it's a mirror image of what's going on in our society. Certainly hip-hop has a history of that, and it's for better or for worse. I mean, you have a lot of positive messages too, and certainly some of the stuff that you do. Switching gears a little bit to the proactive teaching aspect of hip-hop, we talked a little bit about that here. Sure. When I heard Photosynthesis the other day, it's got, what, 250,000 views on YouTube?
A teacher posted it, and it does have a quarter of a million views.
So that, you know, listen, it's not all about likes and views and everything, but I have to say, that says a lot. There's a way that you can connect with kids in certain ways, in a non-traditional way. When you're thinking about teaching, you're a music teacher.
I am.
But it's not just about music, right? So the way that you've been able to connect with children to teach science is kind of a novel mechanism.
So that was part of this project that was called Rhythm Rhyme Results. It's a company that does educational hip-hop with specific subjects in mind and specific curriculum. So I'm a writer for them. They don't really function too regularly anymore. I did a lot of writing for them. I wrote a rap about the standard system of measurements. I wrote a rap about writing and the different phases of writing for their language arts album. And I wrote a photosynthesis song. And then also for they had a freshman econ textbook that they wanted me to write a song for. So I also wrote a 4-minute song about the foundational principles of economics, which is really amazing for me on a few levels. Yeah, right. I mean, the photosynthesis thing was amazing because I'm married to a molecular biologist, and my wife really sorted me out when it came to that song. She was like, we got to talk. And similarly,
but was she a consultant to you?
Oh, she was basically, she was the prime consultant for that song. And then with the economics song, my father is an economist. So
he was a proud papa at that moment?
He was a proud papa, but my father's 85. And so this is like 5 years ago. I had to like really sort of like show him the lyrics. And
he's a very prolific man. I know he won the Nobel Prize in Economics in
99.
Yeah. How did you guys connect when you showed him that hip-hop? Was he sort of getting down to it a little bit?
I can't remember, to be honest. In general, I think the thing that's been amazing about my dad, he is so big in his own work about respecting the lives that people choose to value, that when he sees that I value this life, he's so respectful of that. He knows that I am serious about my music. And he knows I'm not just doing it. It's not just a hobby.
He knows
that I love it. And I think there was a time in my life when he was probably like, oh, like, what is the future of this?
Well, it's Haymarket Lounge, City Winery.
Right here.
Come on.
This is the future.
Well, you know, Ron, you said that this was like a novel thing. You writing, you doing a song about photosynthesis. But I know I'm dating myself, but I'm probably dating all you people
Schoolhouse
as well.
Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah.
Schoolhouse Rock. That's how I learned how Bill was made. Everyone to this day quote and sing that song.
I'm just a Bill.
I'm sitting here in Capitol Hill. Right. I mean, everyone knows that song.
Do the kids in the house remember the Kwanzaa rap? How does it go? Yeah.
Oh, very nice. I tell you, sorry, Kabir. Next set, you're
out. Fired.
I'm
fired.
Yeah. No, but that is that. That, ladies and gentlemen, is like an educator's moment right there.
I'm proud
of you,
kids.
That was, I have to say, no prompting in the green room right there. That was memory and beautiful.
So I'll tell you one other thing. I film in my classroom a lot. I actually currently have a grant at my school to specifically look at videography in the classroom. And I think part of what just happened there, the reason that's not awkward for them, we do spend a lot of time in class having moments where we're like filming our practice. And it's not considered unusual for us to turn on and hit record. And in general, like just trying to create a climate where it doesn't stress people out so much is something that's fascinating to me, because I'm really fascinated by how differently people act around the camera. And that was a big part of why I kind of have this grant right now, is like I wanted to look at education through the lens of the videographer.
Congrats. And that, no pun intended. That's not a small feat. We have a few minutes for questions from you guys. We're going to give you the Shady Hill Kids a little break, because you've been really, you know, participatory today. Thank you very much on a non-school day. Who has a question for Mr. Sen, Mr. Kabir Sen? Okay, go, Chuck.
So I have a question that'll start us off, and I want you all, you have homework right now. So you're up there speaking really, really fast. I'm a musician, I play the guitar, and I can't remember lyrics to save my life. When you start doing this type of rapping and hip-hop and putting it together, how much of that is just innate, something that you can spout off, you can really kind of get those words, those rhythms in quickly, and how much of that is just hours of practice?
It's a little of both. So I first started rhyming through freestyling. That was how I first learned how to rhyme. Was just freestyle rapping with my friends, improvising, kind of making stuff up and failing a lot, sounding really bad for a really long time. And also just kind of not caring about sounding bad and having that space amongst your friends to just let go and try it and not like not feel judged. I mean, it's special because, like, you know, you don't take it for granted. So much of when kids come in, they bring in their assumptions and stuff. But I think as you get older and you start to find your people and you're around people. So I think freestyling was the first window into it. And then once I started writing rhymes, I got obsessed with recording them. And I would record the rhymes, and I still do this to this day. I would record them and I would listen back to them and I'll try them over different beats. And the people that are in the audience that see me with my reggae band, the Crush Factory, I'm always remixing something I've written. So it might be something I've written on a previous album. I'm trying it over this song. I'm constantly remixing my lyrics because otherwise my lyrics are dead and they no longer have any spirit. They're no longer alive. If I take things that I wrote and I try them in different contexts with different musicians, with different people, then they have a new spirit. And so every time I get up there and try that, I'm practicing. And every time I do it, I think I'm just getting a little bit tighter with it, just really start to know the ins and outs of my own lyrics. So sometimes I can be behind the beat, sometimes I can be ahead of the beat. It doesn't really matter. It's become something that is me. It's not something I have to memorize anymore.
We have a question out here from center stage. What's your name, sir?
Ted.
This is Ted. Here you go.
Curious about your career path and how you got here and what brought you to children education. Your performance is really diverse earlier before the show here. And just curious how, and your professional playing, how all that came about.
So when I was in college, I'll go back early. I started playing piano when I was very young. So I was a piano player at age 5. I was born in London, and I moved to Boston when I was 10. My mother passed away when I was 8, but before she passed away, my mother was really close with a music teacher that lived around the corner from me. So I had an experience at a young age playing piano. And that was, I think, really formative for me. Later, when we moved to Boston, my father and my sister and I moved to Boston. I had a hard time in lessons, which has actually been really informative for me as a music teacher. Like, a lot of the struggles that I had with practicing are things that I think it really helped me identify with my students. I connect to that, and I connect to the struggle of it. And for me, a big way that I rediscovered music was through the music of the Beatles. I actually quit playing piano and I stopped doing lessons, and then somehow I just kind of like rediscovered a lot of classic rock and got really into the Beatles, and next thing you know, I was writing songs. By the time I was in college, I was writing a lot of hip-hop. I was a music major and I had an honors thesis where I was writing a thesis about the evolution of political rap. And I was getting really interested in the music of Public Enemy, KRS-One, Gil Scott-Heron, The Last Poets, Amiri Baraka. I was really looking at a lot of like poetry from the Black Panther movement, a lot of political poetry, and specifically taking lyrics and analyzing lyrics and looking at like how they could kind of potentially help influence society. And so then as I started to do that, I realized, you know what? My lyrics have to have meaning too. And so as I was a critic and I was writing this thesis, I started to realize, you know, every time I write a rhyme, like, I don't want it to be like a cookie cutter thing. I want it to mean something. Every time I write something, I want it to have meaning, I want it to have purpose, and I want it to like explain something that gives something to someone else. And if it doesn't, I shouldn't be up here. I don't have a place to sort of share it. And so then I started to take that mentality as I would write. And I think that writing the thesis about political rap was very, very influential for me, because I started to then say, hey, you know, I can have songs with messages too. I can look at our contemporary issues. I know children, and I can do this too. Like, I have some things to say, you know. And so, like, just kind of having that power and feeling that power, I think it originally started with my critique of other people's writing.
You know, I think that what you talk about is really poetry, and it's a way to connect with people. I've listened to a lot of what you have done in the last 10 years, and a lot we're going to hear in a little bit too is that you're able to give a melody, connect with a beat, have someone feel it musically, but also you kind of got to think. It's a good thing, though. You're almost forced to think a little bit.
Yeah.
With a lot of songs these days, you don't need to think. Classic rock and roll, when the Stones play, you don't need to think, right?
And I just want to say, I do not believe that all music has to have like a socially conscious message. That's not my place. You know, that's not what I'm saying. It's just kind of become more my role as I write music. And I know that younger children are checking for my music. And so like, I want to be that positive light for them. I don't necessarily believe all music has to have that.
We have a Crush Factory fan right here. I saw I get a little shout out. What's your name?
Fazan.
Fazan, nice to see you. Here's a question.
So what is success according to you in music? I just want to hear more about it.
What is success?
According to you, yeah.
I don't mean this to sound like conceited, but I think I'm already successful, you know? The numbers of my Spotify plays or my record sales are not the mark of my success, and they never have been, but I think I'm more in tune with that now than when I was younger. I'm 42 now, and I think when I was 22 to maybe to 32, I was really, really focused on, you know, trying to drive my career into sort of like a national spotlight. And that's what I would always do. I was a part-time teacher at Shady Hill at that time. I would play all these gigs. I'd go wherever the gigs were. I would exhaust myself into the ground. And then actually now, even though I'm full-time now, I'm more like committed to playing locally. And I view it as successful because like I have a couple hundred students at two different schools that I feel like I'm making a positive impact on, and I think my work has meaning. And I do definitely wish that my music had more plays. I do want to get it out there more, but I also have found that like my attention is better driven toward being a great teacher. Could you guys put your hands together one time? You better wake up. This is a little remix right here. You better wake up now. You better wake up. You better wake up now.
wake you up with the caffeinated rhythm. After each rhyme's been assassinated, spit him. Opportunities are upon us, go and get him. He claimed that he wanted to succeed, but no one let him learn a lesson or two about the pains and aches. Build strength, learn to ball, don't make the same mistakes. I'm sick of rap, it's insanely fake, but I've been walking through the jungle where it's mainly snakes. And in the vocal booth, us ladies takes. Engage to the microphone, save the date. Props to Ed OG, who paved the way for a boss to do what I do today. And to all the weak MCs with nothing new to say, here's some inspiration for you to play. Bang it in your whip, see what your crew will say. It's time to salvage the career you almost threw away.
We would like to thank Kabir for hanging out with us and for all the fine people who joined us for the live event at City Winery. You can find Kabir's music at kabirsen.bandcamp.com and find out where the various incarnations of Kabir are playing at lizardloungeclub.com, plowandstars.com, and bullmccabesboston.com. We would also like to thank City Winery Boston for their hospitality. You can check out their amazing event schedule at citywineryboston.com. Finally, you can go to AboveTheBasement.com, where you can join us on Patreon. Sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. And remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. Hey, it is Chuck again. We would like to take a quick second to appeal to you to subscribe to this podcast, Above the Basement. There are many really good reasons to subscribe, but I'll tell you just two of them. You never have to check to see if we have new episodes, as they are automatically listed in your podcast app, and it doesn't cost you anything. Just go to AboveTheBasement.com/subscribe, where we have links to all the major podcast apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Radio Public, and more. There are instructions there on how to subscribe, or you can just click on one of the subscribe buttons. If you already have a podcast app on your phone, for the most part, you can just open the app and you will see a magnifying glass there on the interface. Just tap on that and type Above the Basement. You should see us right at the top. Tap on the subscribe button and you are done. While you are there, please write us a nice review. Subscribes and reviews in the podcast universe are an important piece to reaching more listeners, so please take 15 to 20 seconds and help spread the word about ATB. Thank you for your support.